The Firefox uBlock origin story is one of those developments that sounds like a minor browser compatibility update and is actually a window into some pretty significant market structure questions. The headline is straightforward. Firefox is now the last major browser that still supports uBlock origin, the dominant ad and content blocking extension. Score of 1,136 with 418 comments. That's enormous engagement.
For listeners who need the background, this happened because Chrome and Edge and other Chromium-based browsers moved to a new extension, API called Manifest V3, which significantly limits the ability of extensions to do the kind of dynamic, declarative request blocking that makes uBlock Origin effective. The stated rationale from Google was security and performance. The response from the security and privacy community was that it also happened to limit ad blocking, which is convenient for a company whose primary revenue is advertising.
And this is where the antitrust dimension becomes genuinely interesting, which connects to today's curriculum corner. Marcus, do you want to take that?
Happily, because I think a lot of people use the word monopoly without knowing what it actually means in a legal context, and the browser market is a great place to work through it. Antitrust law in the U.S. flows primarily from the Sherman Act, passed in 1890. Section 1 prohibits anti-competitive agreements, price fixing, market division. Section 2 is where monopoly cases live. It prohibits monopolizing or attempting to monopolize a market. The critical thing people often get wrong is that having a monopoly isn't illegal. Exercising monopoly power to harm competition is what crosses the line. So if you're the best at what you do and you got there through superior products, that's fine legally. What you can't do is use that dominant position to exclude competitors through means other than merit.
So applied to browsers, having 60%+ market share isn't automatically an antitrust violation.
Correct. The Department of Justice's current case against Google focuses on whether Google used anti-competitive means to maintain that share, specifically paying billions of dollars to Apple and device manufacturers to be the default search engine on their platforms. That's the conduct at issue, not the market share itself. Now, the Manifest V3 question is different and subtler. The argument would be that Google used its control of the Chromium codebase, which underpins Chrome, Edge, Brave, Opera, and others, to impose a technical standard that disadvantages ad blockers, thereby protecting its ad revenue. That's a conduct-based theory, but proving it requires showing that Google's stated technical rationale was pretextual, that the real purpose was exclusionary, and that the effect harmed competition in a relevant market. That's a hard case to make, partly because the technical benefits of MV3 are real, even if the timing and implementation were convenient for Google.
The HN thread is doing exactly that analysis. Several commenters with Chrome extension development experience are making the argument that the performance and security benefits of MV3 could have been achieved in ways that preserved blocking capability, and that the specific design choices made the restriction more severe than technically necessary.
Which is the kind of argument that ends up in antitrust discovery. We made this technical choice for legitimate reasons versus the technical choice happened to align perfectly with your business interests and there were alternative designs that didn't. That tension is where these cases live.
For users right now, the practical implication is straightforward. If ad blocking matters to you, Firefox is your browser. The HN comments section has a lot of people saying they've either already made the switch or are reconsidering their browser choices. Mozilla's own metrics will be interesting to watch over the next few quarters.
The Rustdesk story is quieter but meaningful for a different audience. Rustdesk is an open-source remote desktop application. Think TeamViewer or AnyDesk, but self-hostable. And they've shipped true unattended remote access support for Wayland, which is the modern display server protocol on Linux. Score of 303 with 129 comments.
This is a genuine technical achievement because Wayland's security model is fundamentally more restrictive than X11. In X11, any application can read input events and capture screen content from any other application, which is a feature from the perspective of remote desktop software and a nightmare from a security perspective. Wayland explicitly prohibits this, which is great for security. and was previously a significant barrier to remote desktop applications working correctly on modern Linux distributions.
The solution RustDesk implemented uses Wayland's built-in remote desktop portal, which is a dbus interface that lets applications request screen capture and input injection through an explicit user consent mechanism. The technical elegance is that it respects Wayland's security model while still enabling the use case. The HN thread has a lot of Linux desktop users who've been waiting for this. It removes a significant practical barrier to using a fully Wayland-based desktop.
And the Anthropic Claude Code post, maximizing the value of your Claude Code sessions, pulled 239 points with 131 comments, which, given that it's essentially official product documentation, is a strong signal that the developer community is actively engaging with it. The HN thread is notably balanced, some users sharing techniques that work, others pushing back on whether the advice reflects actual limitations in the model or limitations in how Anthropic wants developers to work.
The meta observation I'd make is that Anthropic publishing best practices for their own product on the same day that HN has a 799 comment thread asking why Opus 5 feels worse is either bad timing or a very responsive communications team. Either way, it means the two conversations are happening in parallel, and informed readers are connecting them.